It's Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, prices for beef are at a low point, with consumers paying about $2 less per pound than they were in 2015. We'll hear what's driving prices down and what it means for beef producers.
Now, the first of several public hearings on the governor's proposed state budget began today in Platteville.
Lawmakers invited Wisconsin residents to argue for or against certain measures in the budget ahead of the vote in May.
Laurel White joins us now. She's the state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, and she covered the first public hearing today. Laurel, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, set the scene for us in Platteville. What is this hearing like that's underway?
Well, this was the first, as you mentioned, of six different public hearings that are going to be taking place on the state budget over the next couple weeks. We're going to have a hearing in West Allis on Wednesday and in Berlin on Friday. So these are really kind of a unique part of the state budget process in that there are these big public meetings where regular folks, just citizens, can come in and voice their concerns or their support for parts of the state budget that they've been hearing about on the news, and things that they really want to see pushed through, or things that they want to hear and see lawmakers kind of maybe reevaluate and take out of the state budget as this process unfolds.
What was turnout like today, and what were people saying?
Well, the turnout was pretty good. The meeting kicked off at about 10 o'clock this morning, and it's still going mm-hmm. to go until 5 o'clock tonight. I would say the crowd was probably 150 or 200.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting process. This is the first time I've covered a public hearing on the budget. Each individual has about 2 minutes to speak. They have two microphones going. They call people up in groups of about 10 or 15 to kind of queue up behind the microphones. There's a timer. There's a sign that goes up when you've got 1 minute left for testimony. So it feels very busy. It feels like there's a big crowd because of that quick turnover. And you'll have somebody, you asked about what some of the subjects have been so far. You'll have somebody talking about K-12 funding.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have somebody talk about maybe a building project there on the University of Wisconsin Platteville campus. So there's a lot of variety, a lot of different interests, all cycling through really quickly in these meetings.
Some whiplash involved.
Indeed.
What changes did people want to see in the state budget?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, there were a lot of subjects that were coming up over this, you know, the amount of time that I was there this morning. But I noticed about, I would say, three themes were pretty consistent that kept coming back. And one of those was a new engineering building for the UW-Platteville campus. Engineering is one of their flagship programs there. And that's something that the UW system had requested in their capital budget. They'd requested about $55 million to build this new engineering building, and the funding was not included in Governor Scott Walker's budget proposal. So quite a few representatives of that engineering department, actually the chancellor of UW-Platteville, got up and spoke about this as well. And they were really arguing for this building, trying to really drive home that the engineering program is very important to Platteville, that engineering students who attend Platteville tend to stay in the state of Wisconsin after they graduate. And that's something that lawmakers are really focused on right now, workforce development, educating people, and having young professionals stay in the state. So that was a really, really prominent theme I saw unfolding over the first couple hours of this hearing. We also got quite a bit on K-12 funding. A lot of people were saying that Governor Walker's budget proposal doesn't do enough for K-12 funding, which is kind of an interesting dynamic because the governor has said that K-12 education and higher education is really his primary focus in this budget, something he really wanted to invest in. So seeing people saying that's great that he's putting more in, but we just don't think it's enough, that was really a prominent theme this morning as well.
Was there anything in the budget that people came out to support, things that they liked?
Well, you know, I think that we did kind of see that in the education funding debate there. I mean, quite a few folks were coming up and saying, we understand and appreciate that the governor is investing more into education. The governor has actually said that the education funding in this particular budget proposal is exceeds the highest levels in state history, is the exact language from his budget proposal. It's increasing per pupil funding about $600 over the next biennium. So he has really been promoting that, and people are acknowledging that. They're saying, yes, that's great, we support that, but we want more. And I found that that was really a common theme throughout testimony. People would sort of nod and say, I respect the fact that you're doing something on this. I heard that with treatment and diversion programs as well, which is part of the opioid package that we've seen moving through the legislature. Yeah. There are some new bills. People say, yeah, that's great. It's great what you're doing, but we want more. We need more.
So how will lawmakers use the testimony from people who speak today and who speak in the coming at the coming events?
Well, this is, they're very quiet during these hearings, and they say that's because this is really about absorbing information, hearing what people have to say, and then taking that back as they begin to make those changes to the governor's budget proposal. This is really when lawmakers are getting behind the wheel of the state budget process and can start, proposing new things and making some changes. So as they sit quietly here over the next, couple weeks and listen to the hundreds of people that come up before them just for these little 2-minute increments, it's a lot to absorb. But lawmakers say that they really take this to heart. They're listening closely, and they're going to take it all into consideration as they make changes to the budget going forward.
And how do you expect the voting process to go about in May?
Well, I'm hesitant to make any predictions. Yeah, you never know. You never know. But this has been already a really interesting budget cycle. As you know, there's some conflict within the majority party among Republicans about how to fund transportation systems in the state of Wisconsin. So that's going to continue to be a contentious issue. And that issue indeed might bleed over into some other issues. We could potentially see reductions in, for example, the K-12 funding increase that the governor's proposed. Some of that might need to be moved over to transportation. We really don't know. We're kind of in the fledgling stages now of this budget cycle, so we've got a lot ahead of us.
And the next hearing is?
The next hearing is on Wednesday.
And where it is? Where is it?
Where it is. I believe that one is in, let me double check.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
That's okay.
There.
That one is in West Dallas on Wednesday.
Very good. Thank you so much, Laurel.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is the state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. She joined us to talk about the first public hearing on the governor's proposed budget. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we welcome Director of Content Mike Arnold for Mondays with Mike here on Central Time.
Right now, warm weather is slowly but surely on its way back, and that means many of us will be firing up the grill. And if you have burgers or steaks on the menu for your first cookout, you'll likely be saving some money.
And that's because beef prices are at a low point. Production is up, prices are down, and retailers are banking on beef being the meat of choice this spring and summer.
To find out what's behind the drop in prices and where the market may go from here, we're joined by Brenda Botel. She's a professor and the chair of the Agricultural Economics Department at UW River Falls, and she's an agricultural marketing specialist. Brenda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Can you give us a sense of just how low beef prices are compared to what the market has been like in recent years?
Well, beef prices are down. If you look at both from, if you look at cutout prices, so those are the wholesale beef prices. Year to date, both choice and select, they're down between 8% and 9%. Right now, if you're looking at just exactly like the prices, we've had a little bit of some improvement on that, but overall, that's down. That plays into retail prices coming down too. The retail prices are depending on the type of the cut, where you're located, things like that. Those retail prices aren't going to be down quite as much because retail prices tend to be a little bit stickier than the wholesale prices. But overall, that's down. That also plays into then cattle prices. Cattle prices are down depending on the type of cattle that you have. They're down anywhere. If you have fat cattle, they're down about 10% relative to where they were at last year. And if you have yearlings or calves, they're down about 20% compared to last year.
So what's going on here? Why are these prices so low?
So basically the reason why the prices are low is because we have increased our production. If you look at this year, our beef production, we're going to produce about 4% more beef than what we produced in 2016. And if you went back 2016, we produced about 6.5% more beef than what we did in 2015. So even though the amount of consumption by the U.S. consumer is up and our exports are up just slightly, we just have a greater supply. And so when that happens to be the case, those prices are going to come down.
How do cattle farmers feel about this over excess supply? Does this cut into their revenues?
Well, it's depending on where you're at. You have different different producers at different parts of the segment of the industry are going to be feeling it differently this year. So fat cattle, if they're producing those finished animals that are going to be harvested for beef, they're not, the prices are lower. As I said, they're going to be, those finished animals are going to be about 10% lower. But overall, their input costs are down some too, because corn prices are down, as well as the feeder animals that they're having to pay to put on to feed, those are down. So overall, their inputs are down, their input costs are down a little bit more than those finished animals. So they actually have a little bit of profit potential this year. We're probably the ones that are hurting more are the cow-calf producers, the ones who are having the calves and then basically selling those calves and yearlings to the people who are going to feed them out. Their prices are down a lot lower, and their inputs, be it pasture prices and rental prices, are not down as much. And so they're the ones who are going to be profitably, their profitability is going to be down a lot. And they're the ones who are hurt this year.
So how low can these prices go before it starts becoming a problem across many different marketplaces?
Well, the reality is we will see them continue to decline this year. Cattle prices have both a seasonal aspect. So, you know, we expect prices for finished animals to go lower into the summer and then start to go up again. So there's a seasonal aspect, but then there's also a cycle. We started building the cattle herd back in 2014, and it takes about 2 to 2.5 years before we start seeing significant increases in production of beef, you know, because there's a biological lag there. So we've increased that production. We're continuing to build that herd, so we'll see beef production continue to go up. And when we see that happen, those prices are going to go down. Now, we'll probably stall. We won't continue to increase the numbers of cattle probably anymore after about the fourth quarter of 17. But we'll stay at about the same number of cattle, barring any type of weather anomaly that we have now, through probably the latter part of 2019 and maybe into 2020. So what that means is prices are probably going to continue to decline through this year, and then they'll probably stay about the same for 2 years before we start seeing prices go up again.
And in Wisconsin, of course, the dairy industry is the dominant force here in agriculture. But what about beef farming? How big of a role does this play in our economy?
Beef farming does play a big role. Actually, if you look at, you know, if you go back to the Survey of Agriculture and that, you've seen a large number of shift of out of dairy and into, from dairy and into beef operations. Now, the difference is it's little. You see a lot of beef. You have a large number of producers of beef, but they just don't have as many heads. So depending on, again, where you're at, but if you're looking at the cow-calf, you have a large number of there, but their herd size is less than 20. We also have, you know, a larger number of feedlots here. And we're seeing that shift from dairy into beef, and that continues. Where that plays into then, what does beef do, is we have not only does it produce, you know, in the actual production, but then we also see beef processing that generates jobs, and beef production in general does generate jobs and income for Wisconsin.
Why is this shift going on from dairy to beef?
Well, it's just a way in which we've seen over the time for producers, some, you know, there's lots of different reasons for why people shift from dairy into beef. You know, it's been occurring for a while, both from, you know, for about the last decade. Some of it has to do with age of producers, potentially, in the fact that they want to continue to keep animals on the herd. Some of it is the fact of that, you know, you're you can be a smaller producer and still have a beef producer and still have another job. So there's lots of different reasons why we're seeing that, but it's just something that has been occurring. And so we see a large number of beef. I think there's a lot more beef in the state of Wisconsin than most people recognize.
We're talking right now with Brenda Botel. She's a professor and the chair of the Agricultural Economics Department at UW River Falls. She's also an agricultural marketing specialist. We're talking about the drop in beef prices and where the market may go from here as we head into the major grilling season. And Brenda, how do retailers feel about these low prices? Are they really, just getting excited about promotion?
Well, we'll see some promotions. The reality is, beef prices are down some, but, you've also got alternative protein. So you've got you've got poultry prices and pork prices, and those are also down as well. And in fact, actually, pork prices are down on a percentage-wise even more than beef. So from a retail perspective, they have to sit down and look to see what it is that they're going to be featuring. Beef prices, although they're down, they're still actually maintaining their price levels better than some of the other proteins. So if I'm a retailer, I'm going to sit down and decide which feature I'm going to have and which do I have a larger quantity of at this point.
And would a smaller farm be more challenged to absorb the ups and downs of these market prices?
It's very dependent on the production practices. So if you are within the segments. So if I'm a very small cow-calf producer and I only have a couple of head of cattle, I'm probably going to be selling those via private treaty or something else, some other mechanism rather than just taking them to a larger area. If I'm selling them at an auction just as a single head, then I'm going to be probably more hurt by these declining prices because I'll feel that a little bit more. On the other hand, if I'm a cattle feeder, and depending on how it is, if I'm a very small producer, I might be selling directly all of those head of cattle to my own consumers, in which case then I have a greater potential to be able to keep that beef price at the same level than somebody who's, say, for example, selling them to a packer, and they're going to have to negotiate with the packer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I understand weather plays a role in what we pay for a burger or a steak at the grocery store. How have weather events or the conditions affected the market in recent years?
Weather does play a role. In fact, where we see weather playing a role into it is a lot of when we start seeing the cattle herd inventory increase. If you go back several years, we've started trying to build the cattle herd inventory in about 2011. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen because we had drought in the southern parts of the United States, and then 2012 we had a large spread drought, so we didn't build. And that's why I say it didn't actually start and taking until about 2014. Now, the thing is, if we see large amounts of drought or anything like that, you'll see those animals be culled at a faster rate. But without that, right now, we have pasture availability for a lot of these beef cows. And so we'll keep building that herd, which will keep those prices lower.
How do producers get a sense of the demand from the consumer side of the market at any given time? Or do our demands for beef stay pretty constant, predictable?
No, the demand for beef does go up and down some. It's how do they get a demand feel for it is a lot to do with when they are talking to the packers that they are, if they're selling those finished animals, when they're talking to the packers and when they're negotiating with those packers. So the packers are basically the ones who are going to be buying those finished animals and then taking it and putting it, making it into meat. They're the ones then who negotiate and buy those finished animals, and they're the ones who turn around and sell the meat. So if there's a large demand, those packers will, if there's too much of a supply, they might run extra hours. And so that would be beneficial for the finished cattle producer. Or if there's not, then they might reduce their hours, and then that's going to reduce it. So that's kind of where those cattle feeders are going to initially get their idea of what is the demand for beef.
Okay. And what might this mean for beef exports from the U.S.?
Well, what we've seen with beef exports is when we look at it, we actually were down in value a little bit in quantity a little bit in 2015. A lot of that had to do with the high prices of beef. Beef for the United States, coming from the United States, is corn-fed beef primarily, and we export high-quality beef, and so that then demands a high price. And when the prices were already high in the United States, and then we have a value of the dollar that's high, that made those international prices very, very high, and so we saw a little bit of a dip. Given the fact that we've declined our prices a little bit, our prices have come down a little bit, we've seen some improvement in those beef exports. So we saw improvement in 2016. We'll probably see slightly about a 1% more in beef exports for 2017. But some of that has to do with, one, we have availability of beef because we're producing more, and so we can export it. And then, two, because the prices come down a little bit, and so that makes it more desirable as well.
And finally, here in the U.S., are there any indications about where beef prices will be going for the rest of this year?
Well, if you're looking at the beef prices, they're probably going to continue to come down a little bit. So retail prices, wholesale prices, just because we have the availability of beef production that we're here, we're going to see that increase in beef production. So they'll probably come down a little bit still. They won't probably come down as much as, say, for example, your pork prices or your poultry prices, simply because pork and poultry, the increases in those amounts for production is up even more than what we're seeing in beef.
Brenda, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
That was Brenda Botel. She's professor and chair of the Agricultural Economics Department at UW-River Falls, talking about what's behind low prices for beef at the grocery store.
Coming up after the news, WPR's Associate Director Mike Arnold joins us to share news about programming and to answer your questions. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel joins us to share a new program in the state that gives crime victims confidential addresses.
First, each month on the first Monday, WPR Director Mike Crane or Associate Director and Director of Content Mike Arnold joins Joy Cardine to share information about WPR and to answer listeners' questions.
Well, we decided it would be a good time to spread the mics around and host Mike Arnold today on Central Time.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about programming or news coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio? What do you want to hear more of or less of? What do you want to know about WPR's budget or financial operations? Or what concerns do you have or what do you like? Let us know. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Associate Director and Director of Content Mike Arnold joins us now for his inaugural Mondays with Mike, the Central Time edition. Mike, thanks for coming by the studio.
Yeah, kind of scary. I'm used to being tired when I fill in the show.
it's the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah, I'm wide awake.
You get to be hungry for dinner. That's the flip side of it.
That's true.
There has been a lot going on behind the scenes. Exciting stuff, I'm going to say, here at Wisconsin Public Radio in many veins, but we're going to start with one of them, WPR Next. Tell us about that effort and where it is.
Well, one of the things we're doing is trying out some new show ideas, and you'll be hearing them soon on WPR in May. One of them you're involved in, Veronica.
That's correct.
That one. It's called Because Science, about science. We also have a show called Entertain Us, which is entertaining, and one called Beta, and we also have a show called Weekend Wisconsin Life. So those all will be coming up, or I guess just Wisconsin Life. I don't think it's called Weekend Wisconsin Life. But they're all coming up, and you're going to get a chance to hear them on WPR. We'll be airing them a couple times on the air, you'll also have the ability to go online and listen to them as well. And we're interested in hearing what listeners think about them. It'll be fun.
Now, Mike, is it going to be like Survivor? Is someone going to get voted off the island or attacked with coconuts or something?
Not exactly. It's very public radio. We don't do stuff like that here. So we'll have to see. One of the things we have to figure out is where we go after that. But we're pretty excited about what we'll be sharing. So it'll be fun to hear what people think about that.
Great. Well, more to come on WPR Next. And tomorrow, a couple events going on. There is a statewide election for state superintendent, which will have something to do, quite a bit to the shape that education takes as we go forward. And WPR has been a part of that process all along. What kind of resources is WPR involved in?
Well, we'll be reporting it with our reporters. We'll also have conversations on a number of shows, including Central Time, I'm sure. And we also plan to have a live blog during the day and in the evening on WPR.org and also on WisconsinVote.org. And we'll recap the stories. We'll have recap stories after the races are called as well. And we'll have stories on both of those sites. So there's a lot of things going on tomorrow. So if you want to keep up on things, you can go to WPR.org or WisconsinVote.org and get the latest information. And of course, listen to WPR and the newscasts. And we'll also have reports as well.
And Mike, we don't usually take calls this early, but we've got lines queued up already. So I know we've got stuff to talk about. I want to get to that too. But let's weave some calls in since they're here already. And let's take one from Jessica in Eau Claire. Jessica, hi.
Hi. Say, I do really enjoy your guys' show, but I was wondering, would it be possible instead of playing Central Time, like repeating the show, would it be possible to maybe put on a show that had aired late the previous night or even from earlier in the day?
Of Central Time, Jessica, or a different show, different programming altogether?
Just a different program altogether.
Okay, I'm very wounded, Jessica, but I forgive you because you said you liked it.
We'll definitely think about that. One of the things that we try to do with our programs is make them available to people. Central Time's heard twice because people are doing different things in the afternoon. So some people who may be listening at 3 aren't listening later in the day. So it's a chance for the program to be heard by more people. We also have more programs available online or through podcasts. So that might be another way for you to be able to hear things that you missed, something that aired late in the evening. So thanks for that call, Jessica. We appreciate that.
Jessica, really appreciate that feedback. Thank you for calling at 800-642-1234. And Mike, tomorrow is also the annual State of the Tribes address at the Capitol, and WPR, again, part of bringing this to listeners across the state of Wisconsin. What do we need to know to listen?
We'll be having that online at WPR.org. So if you go to WPR.org, you should be able to hear that with no problem. So we do that every year on WPR.
And in terms of exciting stuff, we talked about exciting things coming down the pike at Wisconsin Public Radio. And one that we're all, as an organization, especially excited about is our centennial celebrations. There's lots of cool events coming up and all over the state. That's the other cool thing. They're not just in Madison, Milwaukee. They're all over. Mike, can you give us a little primer on what we can expect?
Yeah, we have all sorts of centennial events happening all over the state. The next one is coming up in Milwaukee. On Point with Tom Ashbrook will be broadcasting live from Milwaukee. Or actually, they'll be doing an evening show, I think, that'll be broadcast the next day on April 20th. I think that's sold out right now, but we're definitely going to be airing that on WPR. Says You has a couple shows coming up, one in Eau Claire and one in La Crosse. So that's on May 6th and May 7th. So if you'd like to see that program, you have a chance to do that. Also in June, Simply Folk is having a shindig with a couple of bands called, I think, like Dead Horses.
And
horseshoes and hand grenades. Yeah, so there's a horse theme, I guess, is what's going on there. That's on June 1st. Also, Larry Mueller is going to be doing a cool thing at Lambeau Field. He's going to do something about Packers history on June 22nd.
Oh, wow.
You can find out about all this stuff on our website. Go to WPR.org/100, and you can either do 100 with the numbers, or you can write it out. Either way works. That's pretty much how it rolls. So
we're talking with Mike Arnold right now, WPR's Associate Director and Director of Content, and we're hearing from you, too. Wisconsin Public Radio is your radio station. We want to know what you think. Let us know at 800-642-1234. And let's take another phone call now. We've got John joining us from Milwaukee. John, hi.
Hi. I've got kind of an unusual question, but first of all, I'd like to say I do like NPR. I like all the shows that you have on, including this one.
Thank you.
And I drive a lot for work, and so I get a chance to listen to the afternoon shows. My question is, how would somebody like me apply to read for Chapter a Day? I love that show. I love that program.
Yes, and John, a little bit of trivia here. Did you know that our technical director here on Central Time, Michelle Good, is one of the amazing readers? I don't normally get to hear her because I'm working, but when I do, woo, it's fantastic. But I'm so glad you like that show. And Mike, do you have some info on for John?
Yeah, we're working on an audition process for Chapter a Day. It's lucky you called, John. Stay tuned. We'll be putting out an announcement in the next month or so on how you can do that. So if you feel like you have the voice for Chapter a Day, we'll have an opportunity for you to try out.
I don't want to put you on that. the spike. I definitely don't want to put you on the spike, Mike. On the spot, Mike. What do you think it takes to become a Chapter a Day reader? Do you have any thoughts about what goes into it?
A good voice and ability to tell a story well and reflect Wisconsin in some way or another. So be somebody from Wisconsin. I think those things would be nice, but I'm sure there are a lot of other things we'll listen for as we get into that. But more on that audition process will be coming out a little later, probably in the next month or so.
All right, terrific. Thank you, John. And let's go to Kara now in Madison. Kara, hi.
Hi there. I'm a longtime public radio member. I would love to hear more coverage about the nonpartisan redistricting lawsuit that seems destined for the Supreme Court. It seems like a case that has pretty widespread national implications and originated right here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I think you will hear more about that. One of the things that we've done recently is we expanded our Capitol Bureau. We have two reporters now in the Capitol Bureau, and that's certainly one of the things that we'll be covering in the coming months. So you should hear plenty about that on WPR, not just in reports, but also in conversation. So thanks for that suggestion, Kara. We appreciate it.
Kara, thank you so much for calling and bringing that up. I always like to hear about that. And Mike, a great annual WPR and WPT event, a joint event there, happened last week at the Overture Center, the Final Forte competition. Can you tell us about that event?
Yes, it's an annual event that we do with Wisconsin Public Television and with the Madison Symphony Orchestra. It's part of the Bowles Young Artist Competition. They get down to four finalists. And some people like to watch basketball around this time of year, but then there are other people who like to watch young people who are extremely talented perform. And that's pretty much what happened with this one. Julian Ree was the winner of that. He's a junior at Brookfield East High School and performed a little bit of Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto. If you missed it or if you want to find out about the people who are contestants and stuff, you can go to the Madison Symphony website because they have these really great profiles of the performers and things like that. And we also aired it twice on TV and radio this past week. So.
Right.
It's great to be part
inspiring
of.
Inspiring stuff, yeah.
One person said that after listening, he believed that there is still hope for the world.
Wow.
So anytime we can be responsible for creating more hope in the world, we're all for it.
That's excellent.
At Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks for sharing that comment.
Yeah.
We're talking with WPR's Associate Director and Director of Content, Mike Arnold, for the first edition of Mondays with Mike on Central Time. He and WPR Director Mike Crane will alternate months between the Joy Cardine Show and here on Central Time.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you love about WPR, or what would you like to see changed? Do you have questions about the WPR budget or where our funding comes from? What keeps you listening? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll pick up our conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're picking up our conversation with WPR's Associate Director and Director of Content, Mike Arnold. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions or comments do you have for Mike about WPR's programming? What keeps you a loyal listener? And what can we do to make your experience even better? You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post over on the Central Time Facebook page. And Mike, let's go to another Mike from Madison there. Mike, hello.
Hi, Mike and company. I really like your show, Central Time.
Thank you.
I think right on a lot of the comments you make and great questions for people that you have on.
Appreciate that.
I would like to see just like one show that just has an open line for people to call in about what they think about climate change. Is it changing around them? How's it affecting? What are they doing to try to limit their emissions, if anything? Something like that. We get enough expert opinion about it, but I don't feel I got a good pulse on where the public really stands on it.
All right, Mike, thank you for your thoughts, and glad you enjoy Central Time. Keep on listening. And Mike, what do you say to that?
Yeah, I think we do provide a lot of opportunities for people to talk about things like that, and we typically do include expert guests to provide some context for it, too. But that's definitely a topic that I can imagine we'll continue to talk about in the coming weeks and years. So expect to hear hours devoted to that or segments devoted to that on our programs. I don't know if we'd have a daily show about that, but it's certainly an important issue that should be discussed. So, Mike, thanks for that call.
Appreciate that, Mike. And we move to Mark in Milwaukee. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi. What did you want to share?
Well, first of all, I really like it when you guys do this. I liked it when it was on Joy Cardine. I think it's a great idea. But what I wanted to talk about was on the last time I heard it on the Joy Cardine show, a guy called in. He was like an older gentleman. He was talking about how he didn't like the show Ask Me Another. And then there was a response like, well, it's more of a generational thing. But, I'm a millennial. My wife is Generation X, and we both also can't stand that show. And so I just thought I'd call in and let you guys know that, there's some people out there that are from the younger generations, I guess, too, that really don't like that show. I don't like the jokes. I don't like the songs. But I know that's just my opinion.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate you calling in. And so not a generational thing, Mark is saying. He's saying maybe it's a taste thing, a personal preferences thing.
Yeah. It's kind of that way with humor in general. I think that there are some shows that try to be funny, and they're funny for some people and not funny for others. And I don't know. I think some people say that Ask Me Another is targeted to a certain audience, but it's very much a public radio show in a lot of ways. Some of the references they have on the shows may appeal to some younger people, but in general, it's a public radio quiz show. One thing we've noticed is that the audience has been growing for Ask Me Another quite a bit. It's successful with many listeners. So we'll just have to see. But I think, Mark, you're probably not alone. There are other people who kind of feel the same way about that show. But then there are also a lot of other people who really like it. So it's always a balance we have to take, particularly with humor programs and entertainment programs.
Well, Mark, thank you for that call and for sharing what you feel. And we go next to John, who is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How about you?
Good, thank you. I'd just like to say I listen during the workday from like 6 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon while I'm working and driving in the car a lot. And there used to be a really lot of different choices of programming where you had some really cool shows. One of them, I forget the lady's name, but it was Jean something. And then there was a man in between that and something else. And it was all different and kind of interesting, and it, talked about travel and stuff like that. And now it seems like it's Joy Cardine show all day long, every day. If you don't like Joy Cardine, you're pretty much out of luck, because it seems like that's all we get.
John, thank you for your thoughts, and I think he's referring back to Gene Ferracca. And
we do hear Joy from 6 to 9 every day, but then after that we have On Point, we have the Larry Mueller Show, we have Chapter a Day, we have Kathleen Dunn. So it actually is a more of a mix than that. We haven't actually expanded Joy's presence on weekdays. Gene Ferracca has been gone for a while. I think she retired about 5 years ago. But we try to have a range of perspectives on the show. But it sounds to me like John, it doesn't sound that way to you. So we'll definitely keep that in mind.
Well, it's interesting too. I mean, sometimes you know, if you're ever watching TV back when it was less on demand and you feel like the same show is always on, but maybe sometimes it's because that's when you're listening.
Yeah.
And that's your perception.
And one of the things we did actually a few years ago, or maybe less than that, is we used to rebroadcast Joy and Kathleen at night, and we stopped doing that so we could provide more range of shows. So it's certainly something that we're you know, interested in presenting variety. So John, thanks for that call.
Mike Arnold is with us now, WPR's Associate Director and Director of Content. He's here for our first edition of Mondays with Mike on Central Time, and we're getting your take about Wisconsin Public Radio. We also want to fill you in on what's happening here, things that we're excited about. We talked about some centennial events coming up, exciting things there, the Final Forte competition, a new generator for WPR programming, WPR Next, lots of things coming down the pike. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. And let's go to Randy. Randy joins us next in Madison. Randy, hi.
Hi. First, the trouble with saying that, well, some people like, and, you know, I guess you're talking about Ask Me Another. Some people like it, some people don't. Because that abdicates your responsibility for judging quality. In fact, I was the person who called a month ago about the show, and it's a low quality show. And the thing is, you should be able to tell that. And that ends up embarrassing the network.
And Randy, thank you for that. And Mike, you were saying earlier that the audience is growing, so that's interesting. Randy
I think that what Randy is talking about a little bit, I'd be interested in hearing what you say, Randy. But there are certainly some programs that are more mission, and there are programs that are more entertaining. Mm-hmm. And I think Ask Me Another is a more entertaining program. And I think a lot of people feel that. Sometimes entertainment programs aren't needed on public radio, but I think that's not true entirely, because entertainment programs can draw people into public radio, and that's one of the things that Ask Me Another does for the people who listen to it. And I do think that measuring the quality of a program is pretty subjective, and we would say that you know, based on our assessment, it's good enough to be on the air on WPR. But I appreciate that sentiment, Randy, and I appreciate you calling us and letting us know what you think.
Randy, if you're still there just briefly, is that something where you have a preference to have what Mike was calling on mission programs versus entertainment?
No, I'm real happy with entertainment, but that's 1 hour of dead air. The main reason I wanted to call is that the compelling reason is that people, sometimes I wish you didn't ask callers to dumb down their questions so far that they have to fit on bumper stickers. In other words, I think sometimes people have fairly complex and nuanced questions. I wish that you give them more leeway to put those on the air.
All right, Randy, thank you for that. Leaving time for things to unfold, it sounds like you're saying, and really dig into those questions. I hear you, and we, of course, will keep these things in mind. Appreciate that. And, Mike, we've gone through a bunch of exciting things, some news. Is there anything else you want us to know about here that's things are doing at WPR?
Well, I mean, we last weekend we won a whole bunch of awards. For our reporting, we've actually been working a lot on, sort of in relationship to what Randy's talking about, is doing more reporting that digs into nuanced issues in some really interesting ways. And you've heard it on the Ideas Network. The Midwest Broadcast Journalism Association, the Eric Severide Award, gave a number of awards to our reporting, including for investigative large market radio, for some work that we did about payday loan interest under new rules. So we've really been working on doing more of that with our news reporting, and fortunately, fellow reporters are hearing that and awarding us for that. We've also received awards for WisConText, which is a website that we do, which provides contextual information about issues that are going on, some of it very deep, and that was awarded also WPR.org, our new website. So Randy, I can understand you feeling depressed sometimes that we don't go into great depth with things, but I think one of the things we're seeing is that we've actually made some progress in that area, and I hope you'll appreciate that.
And hopefully, Randy, enjoy I'm excited about the sense of history that this centennial is bringing about for WPR. And Mike, it was wonderful to have you on, hear your perspective, and also hear about things happening, new things as we look forward here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for coming by.
All right. Thanks.
That was Mike Arnold, WPR's Associate Director and Director of Content, here for the first edition of Mondays with Mike on Central Time. He and WPR Director Mike Crane will alternate Mondays on Central Time and The Joy Cardine Show.
Some people get excited about the first day of spring or the first robin, but a whole bunch of people in Wisconsin are even more excited about the opening day of the baseball season. That is today.
The Brewers haven't made it to the playoffs in a while, but that doesn't mean that the faithful weren't out in force at Miller Park this morning for a little bit of tailgating.
And I'm new to Wisconsin, but I hear the weather was just about what you'd expect for opening day. That is to say, gray, rainy, and cold.
That's what I hear. I've never been to one, but they say this is the usual opening
quo.
Day weather. And the Brewers today up against the Colorado Rockies. And the weird thing for you, Kate, is that you had not heard of the famous racing sausages.
I had no idea what you were talking about. I thought they were dogs.
Well,
dogs.
I mean, there is a hot dog. There's a hot dog, a bratwurst, a Polish sausage, an Italian sausage, and chorizo.
And they're in costume.
They are mascots. They're fuzzy little, you know, sausage mascots.
Do they train for this?
I don't know. I think they run pretty well because they have to run races. So I'm going to say yes. This is Bob Uecker singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley Field.
You do the same for the Cubs. So it's one.
Bob Uecker there, Wisconsin's own Bob Uecker, celebrating baseball. Take Me Out to the Ball Game, saying root for the Brewers. A happy opening day from us on Central Time.